Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast, show number 4, recorded December 23rd, 2010. Podcast for you and your friends with tech questions. We're your family's tech guys. Can't figure out the latest iPod, problems with your smartphone, PC not working right? You've reached the right destination. We talk tech, but for the average guy. Today, I'm again joined by my trusty cadre of guys, Brian Burgess. Brian writes for longtime blogger for How To Geek, and now is writing for SimpleHelp.net, as well as right here at theaverageguy.tv and thehomeservershow.com. Brian, that's a lot of places to be writing.
It is, actually, Jim.
Yeah. Hey, tell me a little bit about SimpleNet. SimpleHelp.net.
SimpleHelp.net.
What's that all about?
Well, basically, it's just a straightforward way of completing your tasks on your PC step by step.
So we'll consider it a help for us, for folks who to help other people with their simple problems, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, look at that as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just common questions, simple answers.
Excellent. Okay, and that's just simplehelp.net.
Simplehelp.net. Yep.
Great. We've also got Christian Johnson. Christian's a developer for Maple Grove Partners and a website administrator, as well as a BIOS developer and a Windows Home Server add-in extraordinaire. Christian, you're working on an add-in at this point, and how close are you?
Hey, it's the eve of the release. How about that?
Good. Yeah, it's coming out pretty quick here, right?
Yep.
And give me a quick little synopsis. I know we talked about this last week, but as you're getting close to this, if I'm a Windows Home Server guy and I want to try your add-on, what's it going to get for me?
It's going to give you a remote desktop, and you go to your remote website, you wake up your PC, you can monitor whether they're online or offline with Ajax without refreshing the page, you wake up the PC, bam, you're done, and then you can remote desktop. Works from the console, as well as the first real add-in to sync into a website portion. It's been done in Vail. Vail's dying.
Dying.
It's in my heart. It's dying.
All right.
I've disowned it from my developer mind.
Yeah.
So we're working to bring functionality back to version 1. Keep new products rolling for version 1. And I think this does a great job of tackling that. And it's clientless software. So wake it up, get your job done, call it a day.
Excellent.
Magic Wake Online.
Well, and if you're wondering what the heck we're talking about when we talk about a Windows Home Server, we also are a big part of the Windows Home Server community, and you can get more information about a home server at thehomeservershow.com. Lots of blogs. I also podcast on that show weekly, and so there's some additional information for you. If you want to get in touch with us at this show, however, you can just send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/theaverageguyTV. Talked a little bit last week about shutting that account down, and I still might do that. So I just effectively stopped anybody from actually signing up for it. You can follow me, Jay Collison, C-O-L-L-I-S-O-N, Jay Collison. I've been tweeting out on that a lot more than I've been doing theaverageguy.tv, and it's really hard to maintain two Twitter accounts. So that will probably go away here in the next week. One of the new things that you can do if you want to subscribe to the show on iTunes, you can do that directly from iTunes now. Just go to the iTunes store and type in Home Tech Podcast. Right now in the search, it's about halfway down the page, and we can't get our album art to show up, so you might not see it. You'll have to look for it. But you can subscribe that way, or you can go directly to theaverageguy.tv site, and we've got some subscribe links out there that you can click on. It will invoke iTunes on your desktop and load everything you need, and you can manage it from there. Okay, we've got a bunch of stuff we want to talk to you about tonight, and I want to get started with Brian, that you a post that you put out there early in the week, I want to say, around editing home videos with Windows Live Movie Maker. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so basically continuing on our theme that we have for the past few podcasts, one of the apps in Windows Live Essentials is Windows Live Movie Maker. And what that allows you to do is take your home movies or your photos, put them all together into a simple app with an easy-to-use interface, you know, add narration if you want, you know, like voiceover narration. You can add music to them. You can add through what you get. I mean, you can add different transitions. You can add different credits. It's basically, it's like Nero. If you've ever heard of the commercial program Nero that lets you edit movies.
Yeah.
This is free. It has a lot of features for the average guy, and it's really simple to use. And you can, like I said, I mean, there's tons of video tools. You can cut, edit. You can add your webcam video if you want. So basically you could, you know, start up your webcam, start recording something, you know, maybe you're doing a video podcast or something.
Well, now it doesn't support point-to-point video. I mean, I couldn't record you and me on webcams at the same time, right?
Not that I know of,
okay.
No.
So it's local, I mean, it's local only.
Yeah. This would be a local deal.
Right. But if I shot some video off my video camera, even off my phone, I did some recording this week at one of the kids' Christmas parties off my, I have an Epic, Samsung Epic, and the video quality is really good on that. I could import that into here and edit it in this movie maker as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And another cool feature about it is once you're done editing your video with, like I said, I mean, they're simple tools to use.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta kind of play around with them. Once you're done editing your video, you can upload it to SkyDrive, Facebook, YouTube, Windows Live, as long as that lasts.
Right. Yeah.
Or Flickr.
March. That cuts off in March, so don't upload it there yet.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, the point is, I mean, it's a very simple, basic video editor that has a lot of power and a lot of functionality.
Yeah, you know, I think for years folks tried to do this with cobbled together tools, or they tried to do some things inside of PowerPoint with pictures and movies and put things together. I think finally we've delivered maybe a movie editing product for the average guy. It's free, right? It's part of the Live Essentials suite, so folks can just go out and download that for free.
Yeah, right. And actually, Jim, if they go to our site, theaverageguy.tv, just go ahead and look at my post. And at the end of the post, I have a couple links to examples of, just still photos that I created a movie out of. You know, I wasn't doing anything super fancy, but it'll definitely give you an idea of what you can can do with Windows Live Writer.
Yeah.
Windows Live Writer.
Yeah.
Movie Maker.
Well, you know, ironically, the ribbon for Live Writer and the ribbon for Movie Maker and the ribbon for the photo gallery are all very similar.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they really do look a lot alike now. And so if you're using one.
Even Office. I mean, yeah, Microsoft's kind of going that way. So
yeah. Christian, are you a movie picture guy? Do you do much with pictures and movies? Do you have to, for school or for the stuff that you do you have to mess around with those very much?
Yeah, I do have a really large music video collection managed by Subsonic and Home Server. And I do some video editing. Just got into using this new software suite called AVS for You Video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, and it's been fabulous. Any file format, literally any video quality type, it'll import it, extract it. Really great for editing any video or audio bit. I have been working with that and quite pleased with the AVS for You suite.
What's the price point on AVS? I know they have a free version, but to get complete functionality out of it, I think you have to pay, don't you?
Right. They do have the free version and trial, but they do have like a lot of different software suites, so you can buy all these like tiny ones, but they have something called a lifetime license, which you buy one lifetime license, and that means you can use all of their products for however long you want to. You'll get support and updates for all the products. So you just buy this lifetime license. I guess it's called the AVS Suite, and then you get all these different products. So some of them are image conversion, audio editor, video editor.
Yeah.
So they have all these separate small packages, but yeah, you just buy that one license. It's a great price, and I'm trying to find the price here. I'm not really familiar on the price, but I know you do that one-time payment, and you're getting this great software, and you're getting all the updates. Any future version, you still get for free because you paid for that license. So.
Now, I'm not going to knock it, but you know, for folks, it's Christmas time, and you might be listening to this right before, or just after Christmas, and you maybe got a new video camera or you know some new equipment to do that with. You could try the AVS. It's got some free trial stuff. I think, and I've used both. I think the Movie Maker in Live Essentials is a lot easier to use. Doesn't quite have as many features. Doesn't quite convert as many different forms of or formats of movies and such. But I think for most folks, the Movie Maker gets you started pretty well.
Yeah, Jim. I mean, it doesn't have as much functionality for, you know, the hardcore video editing user, but it's enough for, you know, your family to put up your family photos or your family videos that you take on your iPod or whatever, upload them.
Right.
Simple, share them out to the family. You're done. It's free.
Well, this week,
simple editing.
This week, I used my phone to video some of my daughter's Christmas party at school, and I did it in three chunks. And so I'm going to import that in. I'm going to mix it together. I'm going to add some music to it and some fun, you know, do some fun edits to it. Then rip that to a CD and give it to the teacher, and she can distribute it from there. So it's, you know, it's already installed on my PC, and that'll be one of my projects for the weekend. So, Brian, good post. Hey, I wanted to let folks know we've also on our posts added some share features that are out there. So if you do make it all the way to the bottom, and you'll see there's a Facebook where you can like the post, and if it's something that's been helpful for you, go ahead and click on that. It helps us get the word out on Facebook. You can also, there's an icon at the bottom that you can click where you can share it on. You can do it a larger post on Facebook, a more of a status update as opposed to just a like. And you can post it to Twitter or Dig or any of those Messenger, any of those social networking services that you use. If you appreciated it and you want to share it with others, it's a really easy way to click, share, and you're done. So just want to let folks know and remind them that they can do that as well. Okay, Brian, anything else on Movie Maker before we move on? Any other highlights there?
Well, basically, I just want to say, you know, especially for people that are listening to this during the holiday season, and you might be getting a new PC that has Windows 7 included, you do need to download Windows Live Essentials. And part of that program is Photo Gallery and Live Movie Maker. And, hey, if you just want to make, you know, something simple for the family, you know, post it on YouTube, whatever, it's free, easy, and there you go.
Yeah, and I think we've been posting those out under – if folks have missed the you know, the other updates or the other blog posts that you've done around Live Essentials. We have a category called Windows Live Essential under Home Tech. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv, click on Home Tech, and then look at the drop-down, you'll see Windows Live Essential, and all the posts we've done around Windows Live Essential are out there. You can go back and look at some of the past ones that we've done as well, and those can oftentimes be helpful. So, Brian, thanks for that post, and we've got more to come around that as well. Okay, Brian, this week you and I were chatting on Skype, and you just got done watching a whole bunch of football, and you said to me, hey, what's up with all these to-the-cloud commercials? And
yep.
And Microsoft has spent a good amount of money kind of over the holidays advertising a product that you may or may not even know that they're advertising. So these commercials, and we have four of them that we're going to share with you here as we kind of work through this. But these commercials for Microsoft all have this to the cloud theme. And if you haven't seen them, you haven't been watching TV. They've been everywhere. But they're comprised of families in different circumstances trying to do different things on their computer. And at some point, they get this idea and they say, to the cloud. And when they say that, the computers, you know, the walls move or the table flips over or, you know, various things happen. And a new PC shows up and they do this activity that is kind of in the cloud. Now, off show, it's before we started the show, we had some discussion, maybe a little bit of lively discussion about what exactly the cloud is. And so let's talk about that first real quick here. So and I said, and Christian, I'll point this to you because you were the one who kind of brought it up. The cloud, as I see it, as at least as Microsoft is defining it, is anything that's not stored locally. So a YouTube could be a cloud video sharing solution, right? Vimeo would fit in there as well. Pandora could be a music cloud sourcing solution. So when I think of the cloud, I think of anything that's consumed basically on the internet. Do you agree, disagree, have thoughts on that?
I think in some ways that's a fair assessment. In other ways, though, there's a lot of interesting things to take into account in the history of how the name To the Cloud became mainstream and what To the Cloud means. Back in 2000, there was a huge, as the IT department kind of grew, the traditional model for IT was that the IT guys wanted client computers to be dumbed down, and they wanted, you know, the server to have all the functionality and control, and then they just wanted the client PCs themselves to kind of be dumb so that they could control them and be able to make sure that no one else was modifying them. So they lost that control in around 2002-03. So the model kind of changed where clients became had more, you could do more things on the client computer. So like say you're at a library and you're an IT guy. In 2002, you could probably see what everyone was doing on the client. It was a pretty dumbed down system. Everything was locked down. And then as that progressed, the control went from everything being on the server to there being allotted controls and permissions on each computer, and that's really where the evolution of user accounts comes in. So now we're seeing, in my opinion, we're seeing the same thing again on a larger scale.
Sure.
Now, whereas in 2006 and 2007, we see the rise of home server and Microsoft's vision of people doing things and keeping their data at home and building it out, I've seen a change go from let's teach the average family how to have a home server, how to keep their data managed properly. I've seen it go from that to 2009, 2010. Oh, just stuff it all up in the cloud. We'll take care of it for you. Don't worry about this home server product. You know, you can just put our data here. It'll be safe. You can share it. All your family can have it. It'll be wonderful. Now, to me, does that raise concerns? Sure, it raises a lot of security concerns. Not as much as, you know, someone's going to hack and steal my data, but I don't feel comfortable ensuring my entire network on something that isn't mine. Why would I just start beaming all of this data up to the cloud? And what is the cloud? Is it a server in China? Is it some server that you're buying and being allotted to by Microsoft? What is the cloud? And I, you know, when I'm driving home some days, I'll see a billboard that says Advanced Cloud Computing 2000. I just look up and I say, gee, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you get absolutely no information.
Well, you know, the origin of that, though, to go back, the origin of that is when network administrators used to draw the internet on diagrams, right? So they'd be diagramming their network infrastructure. They would use little boxes for servers and put lines in between them and such. Whenever they wanted to represent a line going out to the internet, they would draw a cloud. I mean, they would
right
on the board. It looked like, you know, the way you draw a cloud. You know, actually the way a 3-year-old would draw a cloud. But they would, you know, draw the little lines and they would put you know, internet or whatever they would write in there. And so that word cloud became interchangeable, at least in the IT management space, with the idea of the internet. And so I think Microsoft's loosely now applying that to any of their solutions that use the internet to share or to interact. We look at Messenger. That's point-to-point communication between two people. Yeah, that nothing is stored on the cloud, but it uses the internet to make that connection. Before we get into the security piece, guys, I don't want to go too far because I have that set up for next. I want to go through these commercials real quick, and I want to talk about the various solutions that are here because I think a lot of people maybe have seen these videos and not have any clue as to what kind of technology is behind it. So some of that will flesh out what we're talking about, and then we'll talk about security, okay? So let me play, and unfortunately we don't have video here. We just have the audio piece, but let me play the audio of this. And this first one, you can go to YouTube, and if you just search for the cloud, you can see any of these videos. This first one's called Boxmas. All right, listen to this.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, son.
Hey, what's up, Grandpa?
How did Jesse like his present?
Well, Dad, you know, he,
Dad, why don't you, show him that video you shot?
Well, why don't we all watch it when we're together?
To the cloud.
The what?
Oh!
Well, look at you.
Oh, yeah.
Hit and play now.
Jesse, look before our granddaddy got you.
I'm worried about that boy.
To the cloud with Windows Live to create and share anywhere.
All right, so in that video, they're instant messaging across, and he says, why don't we share that video, and to the cloud, and the table flips over. And basically what happens is they're just sharing, is they bring up, I believe, guys, that's Messenger. That's the Messenger client that's built into Windows Live Essentials. And they're sharing a Ustream feed, I'm sorry, a YouTube feed of a video together. Is that
right?
You guys see it that way as well?
Right, yeah.
And so it's a situation. I mean, video chat still hasn't really taken off for the most part. We use it a lot with Skype. But folks are still kind of intimidated by video chat. Cloud-based, Christian? Cloud-based, is that cloud? Are they going to your cloud to do that?
Yeah, I think in terms of just over the internet, it's the cloud, but is it your cloud or is it my cloud or whose cloud is it?
Is it the cloud?
Yeah.
It's the cloud, right? I mean,
If you want to replace the word the cloud as being internet, that's fine. But to me, I think internet, you know, I don't see video messaging as something being the cloud. You know, you're sharing a YouTube link, but it's not like you're saving any data on a different server, and that's where, for me, that's where the disconnect is.
Well, but he had to push that file to YouTube to begin with, right? So he recorded the kid, and by the way, the kid's in a box. That's why the grandfather says, I'm worried about that boy. The kid's in a, you know, he sent him this toy, and the kid then ends up playing inside the box, which every kid does, right? The box is better than the toy, and everybody's going to experience that at Christmas here in 2 days. But so he uploads that video to YouTube first, you know, which that's a whole other show. But
well, Jim, just to interrupt, I mean, you can use Windows Live Movie Maker to make that video,
right.
And then upload it
directly to YouTube, right?
Directly to YouTube. Yep.
Yeah. And then, although, you know, well, let me just say this, but I don't want to belabor this point too much. I'm always kind of worried about putting my own personal videos out on YouTube, right? I mean, it's wide open, and anybody can see that stuff. So anyways, so he uploads it to YouTube, and then through a Windows Messenger video chat, they share this YouTube video. I mean, I think that's pretty cool, and I think it's something not a lot of people are taking advantage of today. You know, and I think as people get computers this Christmas, or maybe they have a webcam and they never use it, I think there's some incredible opportunities through, like, a Messenger. We happen to use Skype. There's a couple other ones out there. Brian, you use one called Pigeon. We talked about that, right? Does that do video as well?
No.
Okay, so it's just audio. But I think there's some opportunities to really connect families at this Christmas time.
Right. excuse me. And the thing is, I mean, yeah, maybe it's not secure. Don't put up your, you know, personal videos or anything like that. But
people do.
Well, good for them. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's their choice. But
right.
It's a simple way to share your holiday funness with everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah. Right on.
You know, you just take your kid dancing in a box, say,
yeah.
for instance, or your cat playing with the bow.
Right.
And you take a video or your video shot of that, plug it into your Windows 7 PC, edit it however you want with a simple interface that Windows Live Movie Maker has, and then upload it to YouTube and then share that link with your family. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many videos on YouTube. I mean, you know, I mean, who really cares, you
sure.
know, unless sure. they're, you know, don't do anything, you know, non-PG.
There you go. Okay, let's do a second one, and I'm going to do, this one's called Airport, and there's a couple sitting, waiting for their flight, and it's been delayed, and they say anywhere from 15 minutes to 3 hours. And this guy gets the idea. So let's listen to this one called The Airport and what technology they're using. Here we go.
Seriously?
To the cloud.
What?
Check it out. I pulled up the screen from our PC at home. It's like we're right there at the house. Now let's see what recorded TV we have on there.
Celebrity Probation. Season premiere. Yay, cloud.
To the cloud, Windows Live, to create and share anywhere.
Okay, guys, what are they using there?
So now remote desktop is to the cloud?
Well, that's what they're saying. Remote. So they're using Windows...
Or Live Mesh.
Live Mesh, right? They're using Windows Live Mesh to remote control their home PC. Which
keep in mind, though, that your PC has to be on
right.
at that point. And maybe Christian could talk about...
Hold that point for one sec, Brian.
I don't
want to get too far away from the solution first, and then we'll go there. So they're most likely using Windows Live Mesh to log into their home PC. They're using a video, I think, right, that was recorded through Media Center. And then they're pulling that video across the web down onto their laptop and viewing it in the airport. Would that be?
Yeah, it would have to be through Media Center. But it could be a third-party program too, but
yeah.
Obviously it's Windows. So
no, it's all Windows, right? So they're pulling it across and they're watching it locally. It's not a streaming deal. It shows them copying and pasting that file to the local laptop. And then watching that, she says, "Yay, cloud!" It's funny in the video too. And he says, "To the cloud," and she looks at the camera like, "What are you? Who are you talking to?" It's pretty funny. In that scenario, that all works pretty fast. I mean, they're watching video within about 10 seconds, but we know that video files are pretty large.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
at all. Plus, I mean, you know, okay, say you're sitting in an airport, okay, some airports give you free Wi-Fi connections, some don't.
Right.
So sometimes you got to pay for it, or you need to have a subscription to a 3G broadband connection.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's not as simple as the commercial makes it look.
Yeah, that one. Christian, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with Brian on that point. I just, you know, concept-wise, if it were a perfect world, all those technologies are there and it's possible to do. But is it practical to just pull that up in an airport where you're probably looking at GoGo in-flight that charges $10 just to figure out how to get connected? No. Again, though, what is to the cloud? I mean,
yeah.
why can't I just say I'm going to remote desktop into my computer now? Why is that called the cloud now? I mean, should we just rename Microsoft as a company to cloud? Just give me a second here.
Okay.
Going back to around 2000, had to be 2008, I went to a Microsoft, it was like a developer day. They had Windows 7 RC1, and they were showing some of the new features and technologies. And they had a morning session and an evening session. And in the evening session, they talked about this whole new wonderful platform that everyone was going to fall in love with. And guess what the name was? It was Windows Azure. And everyone kind of looks up and they go, huh, what's Windows Azure? So some people are sitting here thinking it's their next operating system. Some people are sitting here thinking it's the code name for Windows 7. You know, it's just getting really confusing. The presenter gets up there and he starts talking about this great cloud-based service that is an operating system for the cloud that serves as development and hosting space for anyone. So, I mean, I don't hear Windows Azure being advertised anywhere on TV, and yet that was the first time Microsoft introduced the term the cloud was with Windows Azure, which in the home network and the home community, it's not there. It's just it's really all developer stuff.
But isn't this brilliant? Because they take these what have been difficult concepts for people to get their hands around, and they at least in 30 seconds have made them pretty easy. Now, we know it's
undoubtedly
difficult.
The marketing of it is brilliant.
Yeah.
But
because grandma doesn't want to say, I mean, grandma just wants to know, I'm going to watch the video of my grandkids.
Right.
She doesn't care what it's called, right?
Right.
She doesn't care if it's in the cloud or if it's on a home server or it's on somebody else's server or it's on a floppy disk. She just wants to watch it.
Yeah, and it's not like you can just talk into your computer and Windows 7 voice or speech recognition and just say, to the cloud, you know?
Right.
I mean, and then you're just going to get what you want. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that. However, it is a brilliant marketing strategy.
Yeah. But I guess it is getting easier, right? I mean, the thing is, some of the complexity of some of these products, I mean, we all remember 3 or 4 years ago how hard it was to do remote desktop, for example. The way we do it today. I mean, using Mesh, I can connect to any two computers from anywhere in the world with a live ID.
And not to mention home server.
Yeah, yeah.
And Windows home server.
Right. So that has taken a very complex problem that used to require a PC anywhere or another product that I would have to buy, and it's made it free for me, and it's made it pretty easy.
Yeah, Microsoft has done a lot to improve that.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So, I know we're saying both sides of the equation here, and we're arguing two different things.
We're kind of just debating it on both sides. Yeah. So,
Christian hates the to the cloud campaign.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
I love it.
Let's take it from both sides. Yeah, so you know, the average guy can just kind of figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and the
for
goal.
Himself. You know.
The goal here is to kind of say, okay, what is there – as you watch these commercials, if you're wondering what the heck they're doing or how they're doing it, this is how they're doing it. And it's not impossible. I don't think it's always as easy as you think. But let's look at this next one. It's called Startup, and it's a small business trying to handle a document problem. So here we go.
The investors love the idea, but we have to tighten up the business plan in 2 hours. And we need everybody on this.
To the cloud.
With the cloud, we share a sync folder that allows us to all work on the same documents. So now our chief marketing officer can tweak it, our CFO can number crunch it, our president can green light it, and our CEO can quit his day job. Thank you, cloud.
Can I come?
No.
To the cloud with Windows Live to create and share anywhere.
Okay, now another thing that used to be really difficult was sharing files with people all over the place, right? In a variety of different places, doing a variety of different things. That, too, I think has gotten easier. And we kind of debated early on what we thought the solution was. Brian, you thought this was an Office 2010 cloud-based solution or internet-based solution, right?
Well, it is, but I mean – apparently there is more solutions than just 2010.
Yeah, well, certainly within Windows Live, there is a product called App on the SkyDrive, and they have Office apps integrated into the SkyDrive application. So if you go to live.com and you log in, you could go to a tab called Office, and there's four products. So it's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, which is a pretty cool little application.
Yeah.
And those are all for free.
The only thing, though, they are free, but the only thing you're not going to get is the full functionality of the full Office suite.
Yeah, but who uses the full functionality of the full Office suite? I mean, really, if you're just writing a document, right?
Well, right. You know, for the average guy, yeah.
Let's look at us, for example, right? So you live in Minnesota, I live in Omaha. Christian, you're out in Buffalo. We have show notes that we need to share. And edit and stuff. And actually, I started doing it when I started the show. I started doing it on Live, and sharing those out. All three of us could access the same document, edit it, save it, work on it in our three different locations. I mean, in my mind, I think this is as we talk about the cloud, this is the closest cloud solution, to the name, Christian, when we say to the cloud. These are documents being stored on Microsoft servers somewhere, somewhere in the world that we all have access to remotely.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a direct competitor of Google Apps. That Google Apps has gotten a ton of press because they're free, and Microsoft quietly rolled out these Office apps for free and didn't like a lot of things Microsoft does, didn't make much fanfare out of something that I thought's a pretty good product. I don't know. Have either of you guys used those products that are available in Live?
Well, I think the versus, he versus them type of argument is you do not get the amount of functionality with Windows Live apps that you do with having it locally. On the other hand, Google Apps or Google Office apps or whatever, they're fine for a lot of people. You know, if we're looking at the average user,
either one's probably fine,
yeah. You know.
If you like Office, though, if you're used to Office.
But you know, I mean, Office apps Google Docs is so simple, so easy to use. And, you know, since so many people in the world use Google.
Well, but more people use Office than use Google Apps, right?
Yeah, and that is another good
they
point.
They use it at work.
That's another good argument. Absolutely.
They used it at work, so... I would challenge people if you have not looked at the free Office apps that are available at live.com, you're missing out on some pretty good software that you don't have to pay a dime for. You know, there's lots of programs for folks who at work you can buy. I think through my work I can buy a copy of Office for $20, right? So I can have a full-fledged copy at home for pretty inexpensive price. To be honest with you, I'm not sure I even need that anymore because for most of the word processing or the Excel stuff that I do, I don't need the full functionality.
It really depends on how much Office work you really need. Well, spreadsheets.
If you're a
PowerPoint
user.
If you're a power user, I mean, man, go free.
Christian, have you used either one of those, either the Office apps or the Google apps, and do you have any thoughts on either one of those?
Yeah, my school uses Google Apps as everyone gets a Google email account and has the apps available to them. And I got to say, a lot of students, they share documents over Google Docs, and they just use it with their email. They're not sitting there trying to figure out how to deploy and use Live. I mean, just we're given Google Docs, and that's what everyone uses, and they get along fine. So, I have used the Google Docs. It's easy to use. It opens up the Word documents that you have on your local PC, and it gets the job done. I don't see why you need to switch over. But
sure. Yeah, I think you make a good point, and certainly those two are going head-to-head in that app space for sure. There really isn't anybody else out there competing for cloud-based applications around, you know, productivity applications.
Yeah, I mean,
Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
Well, when it comes down to it, if you're using Microsoft Office applications in your day-to-day life, the cloud-based features is probably a great godsend. If you're just an average person that wants to go out and, you know, create a spreadsheet, a simple Word document, this and that, and share it with other people, just go with Google Docs.
Okay.
And save your money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, certainly there are, you know, a lot of these solutions are free. And so folks, I always encourage folks, go out and find out for yourself, because, you know, you can listen to us say we like this, we like that, but ultimately it's what you like. So spend a few minutes. You'll have some time off during the Christmas break here. Try either one of those out. It won't cost you a dime to do either one. You know, the apps are available for, you just have to have a Gmail account. And on the Microsoft side, you can try the Microsoft apps, Office apps, and those, you just need a live account, and you can give those a shot. Okay, I want to talk about security on this, right? Because this week in the cloud, right, we use Skype, and that's an internet-based solution. We're using Skype as we talk to each other and record this conversation. Yesterday, Skype went down. Now, that was absolutely unbelievable. As I looked at Skype last night, 2.9 million people were using Skype when I logged back in. I think they've had as many as 15 or 16 or 17 million people that I've seen, maybe more, using that at any given time. How can a company like Skype go down and have their services not available for people? I mean, isn't it 2010? Aren't we immune from that kind of stuff? And what kind of risks does that present? If I'm storing all my documents on Microsoft servers or on Google servers or I'm dependent on Skype for communication and those things go down, I mean, what kind of risk does that put me at?
Well, with Skype, it's a peer-to-peer, P2P network. And so I have a hard time believing that they went down at all.
Well, they did though.
They went down.
What am I supposed to do if I'm the guy depending on that service?
So we're coming to the close of 2010, and what do we see at the close of 2010? Even for the crazy business end of it all. We see servers that are replicating each other. If one goes down, the other knows to compensate. So when people look at Skype, they say, gee, what the heck happened? What happened is, even though Skype is peer-to-peer, which means that, in essence, each Skype instance, they're communicating through each other to make a connection. So if I'm talking to someone else, that connection established between the two of us is helping someone else. That's what peer-to-peer is. The issue was not with those peer-to-peer connections. It was a authentication issue where their authentication login servers failed. So if you were already logged into Skype, you were fine. But if you had logged out and you were trying to log back in, you couldn't log in because those authentication servers were having a problem. Now, it does play back into the peer-to-peer and nodes, which I'm not sure where that exactly lies, but I think when people think of Skype as peer-to-peer, they're thinking bandwidth and communication, sending bits back and forth. This was more of a thing where the servers were able to use the data, but no one could log in. So
right.
For some reason, the authentication servers went offline.
Right.
Now, is that hard for people to grasp? I think for people who depend on Skype, it's like, yeah, how could this happen? But for me, I think it's not the first time it's happened with Skype. Obviously, it's a large, growing community that probably shouldn't have had that in the first place. But I don't see any of these technologies out there right now being foolproof to the point where they'll automatically just back each other up and run each other. Definitely it's coming along a great way from 2 years ago, where now we're seeing servers just literally as soon as it sees its brother go down, it just hops in and takes its place until it's back online.
Right.
And it happens. There's no easy finger to point at when this stuff is when this stuff happens. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised, and I honestly am. I'm surprised how quick the recovery was, because for their main server, for their main authentication server to go down and for them to have it recovered so quick, while it's flawed that they didn't have it while they had the issue in the first place, I thought the recovery time was admirable.
Yeah.
Which brings up another great point, which is, do you want all your data on the cloud?
Yeah. Well, that's the point I was going to bring up, Brian. And let me read over some failures of 2010. And just to give some folks some ideas, because maybe some folks haven't even heard about these things yet. And then I want to ask, Brian, I want you to ask that question again. So early in the year, Wikipedia failed. So Wikipedia, the largest, right. WordPress failed. WordPress.com crashed. Gmail has had several outages throughout the year where people weren't able to get their email. I mean, imagine how dependent we are on email. And if you're solely depending on for Google for your email and it goes down, you're screwed. I mean, you're not getting it. It's not on a server somewhere local where you can get it. Back in April, China rerouted internet traffic internally. Right. So it has control over that. Of course, we remember the problems that Twitter had during the World Cup as it got inundated with traffic around the events of the World Cup. Facebook had issues back in September. They had some problems that where the site wasn't working correctly. Foursquare, which is a location-based social media or social networking site, had trouble. PayPal, this is a financial site that people pay, millions of dollars are transacted through PayPal every day. PayPal had problems. Tumblr had issues. And you can't, you'd have to have lived under a rock not to have heard about or seen what went on around WikiLeaks. Now, that's not necessarily a cloud problem, but certainly as we look at all those, and now Skype yesterday, as we look at all those, Brian, ask that question again. How much should we store in the cloud, right?
Well,
is that what you're asking?
I mean, yeah, basically. I mean, you got to look at, hey, man, if you're going to store your data on the cloud into these services that, who knows where their servers are.
Right.
They're not going to tell you.
Sure.
They could be in China, like Christian said. They could be, like Google scattered throughout the United States, India, who knows?
So Brian, what information are you comfortable having in the cloud? What do you personally put that's not local to your PC there? What do you put up there?
Personally, I do is I store my important files in Carbonite.
Okay, which is a backup. So it's a backup solution.
Which is a backup solution that is $54 a year, I think, like that. But I don't know where that data is.
Sure.
They say it's SSL encrypted, but I don't know where it is.
Do you post pictures to Facebook?
Yep.
In the cloud.
That's in the cloud. Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Right. Is that your only source of pictures? Do you also have those locally somewhere, or do you?
Oh yeah,
on Facebook.
The point is, when it comes down to backup, you're gonna want to have an online solution, an offline solution, but the most important, if you're skittish about having your data backed up on the cloud, is having your data backed up locally. And that means, backing it up to a DVD or a CD, an external hard drive, or a Windows Home Server, or a Drobo.
Sure, sure. Christian, what are you keeping that's not local to you that would be up in the cloud, so to speak?
In the cloud, really the only thing I have, a Dropbox, which is general documents that I wouldn't be concerned if someone else read, a couple tutorial guides and PDFs. I store a couple photos from, like if I do a write-up and I have like screenshots of something, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And some of my software packages and mirrors are available on my Dropbox. And on Facebook, really just basic stuff. I don't, sure, there's a couple photos of me up there, but I'm not that person who comes home from some event and has a bunch of photos and just plugs in their camera and uploads them all to Facebook.
But a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
To me, it's scary, but, you know, obviously this is what we're evolving is where people are putting their trust in these remote sites. So I think now the question is, do we educate people on thinking twice about putting something out there, or do we educate the people who are running these things on how to have tighter security?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you think about that question, the answer is you can always be in control of your own data. You can always make that choice yourself. But no matter how hard and how earnestly a IT staff tries to keep users' data confidential and secure, there's always going to be that hacker. There's always going to be that hole. And I don't think that's ever going to stop. That's a continuing cycle. And that's part of these security flaws are, that's what makes things better, is when it forces people to go back and rethink and patch up. So I think the only real trust level that's out there is your decision, which is base number one, and you're making so you're deciding, is this the photo I want to be out there? And you make that decision. And if it is a photo that you have no problem with other people seeing, then fine. When Facebook gets another security exploit and the hackers download, you know, your entire album, you're fine with that data because you know that it's something that you didn't feel queasy about putting up there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, actually, TMZ accesses a lot of open data that a lot of celebrities don't want them to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think it just...
And that's out on the cloud. I mean, once it's out there,
right,
it's out there. Yeah. You know, whether it's, you know, and then if the federal government feels like shutting down a certain site, well, good for you. There's like 10 other mirror sites that are going to have the same information.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And I think, although I don't want people necessarily to think they have to err on the side of paranoia, because there is an enormous amount of value to the Facebook platform. And it is a good place I'll be honest with you, I spend some time on Facebook. It's now kind of replaced email for me. You can't get spam on Facebook. You can't, because you have to approve every single person who can communicate with you. There's some benefits to it. So
yeah.
I think
just don't put out information out there that you don't want to have public.
Sure.
I mean, you know.
Just be careful.
It's using common sense.
Use common sense. Hey, right. I went to the park today and walked my dog. Okay, that's fine. Put that out there. Show a picture, whatever.
Yeah.
But, show a picture of the dog.
Yeah.
Well, and show a picture of yourself. I mean, it's and we don't have
cat,
to be. Yeah.
And the cat with the
with
the iPod, you know, laying on it. But
I've seen some really good. I mean, I see some really good sharing, and Facebook's been really good for me, and in getting and keeping up with my nieces and nephews and my cousins. And we're out in the middle here. I mean, we live in Omaha. We don't have any family around us. We don't see them very often. So certainly I've been able to use Facebook to keep up with family members that I just normally wouldn't be able to keep up with.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you are, Jim. Yeah. I'm out in the sticks of Minnesota, and I mean, it's a good way to keep up with general information about your family, and you know, don't put anything out there that's scandalous, basically. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then you have nothing to worry about. You know, who cares who sees it? Yeah. Nobody cares about seeing you and your aunt at Christmas.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, my mom she follows us on Facebook, and for her, that's kind of her only way, and I shouldn't say it that way, because I could send her pictures if I wanted to, but it's just pretty darn convenient to upload those pictures of the kids to Facebook and where she can see them.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think, you know, Christian, you said common sense, and I think that covers a multitude of sins in what we're doing here. Just don't, you know, just have some common sense when you're using those.
Don't be scared of the internet. Just use common sense.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, we're running out of time, but one more thing I want to talk about. You know, if you don't want to keep your data in the cloud, so to speak, outside or on the internet, outside of your network or on the internet, there are a couple solutions that you can use to make this easy. Now, one of them is what we talk about all the time over at the Home Server Show, which is just a Windows Home Server. And I don't want to get too in-depth on that because we do a lot of that coverage over at the Home Server Show. But folks can, and there's a pretty good solution for Microsoft, that you could have an additional PC in your house that acts as it kind of acts as an internal cloud, right? I mean, a home server allows you to store your photos, store your music, store your movies, stream music in your house, right? I mean, all those things, you can do that inside your house, right?
Yep.
And and that's what we're talking about, Christian, this add-on that you have coming out for the home server. If I'm outside of so I've built this cloud in my house, and if I want to get access to it, this is what your add-in does, right, from the outside?
Mm-hmm.
So it wakes up my PCs that might be sleeping, you know, might be powering down. It goes in and it wakes them up so I can have access to them. It, you know, what else does it do? What else can I do with that add-in? Wake up PCs?
Wake up and be able to monitor and see what goes online and offline.
Sure. So that's weird. It's a reverse cloud, right? It's you coming from the cloud monitoring stuff that's going on inside your own network.
Right, and future versions will extend functionality to be able to sleep computers and do that kind of stuff and monitor the server more. But this is the initial release. So.
And we know on Home Server version 1 and on the newest Home Server, and they have some streaming capability. So I can load the music up on my Home Server. It doesn't go anywhere but my house. But I can listen to that from anywhere, right? I could log into my Home Server from work and listen to my music. Right? It'll stream. So there's a way of doing a reverse cloud if you want to keep your data local to you. Of course, there's external hard drives that you could purchase, put on your PC, and store data to those as opposed to them being on your PC or backing up to those things. One of the things that I've been reviewing over the last couple weeks is a product called Adrobo, and I have a review on it at the Home Server Show, so homeservershow.com. It's on the front page there. But it's an external storage enclosure that allows me to put three or four hard drives in it and stripe them all together so they look like one single drive, but that piece of equipment is smart enough to protect the data that's on there. So if any single drive fails, I don't lose any data. So, again, there's other solutions out there that folks could use if they didn't necessarily want to move everything up to the cloud. Now, we always recommend that you store a copy locally, right? I mean, good backup is this, right? A copy on my PC, a copy stored locally that's not on my PC, that's on something else, and then something up in the cloud, right, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I do.
So
yeah.
If I screw up the copy on my PC, I can always pull it locally to get it back. If my house burns down and I lose both my PC and my backup copy in my house, I can pull it back down from the cloud. If the cloud goes away, I still have both copies in my house. I mean, that seems like that's a pretty good strategy to me.
Absolutely.
And Brian, you mentioned Carbonite, right? Carbonite's one of those cloud-based backup solutions.
Right. And everything's encrypted from the time you take it from your computer to their servers, wherever right. their servers are.
So security is paramount for them, because if they're not securing your data,
yeah.
they don't have a job.
And, you know, I have no problem paying for that.
Yeah.
You know,
and you said, what, 50
might,
bucks a
Christian
year?
Christian might have a little bit of a problem with my idea there, but...
I don't know. Carbonite seems pretty reliable to me, actually. You know, personally, I have no need for it because I got home serve and everything, but...
But what if your house burned down to the ground?
And that would be unfortunate.
All your PC equipment was destroyed. Or
I wouldn't leave the house until I pulled the server out of the wall.
I was gonna say, let's not be so drastic. What if a thief comes in and steals all your computer equipment? That's probably saying it better. That's like saying, what if you were hit by a bus? I mean, that's not very nice, right?
Yeah.
But let's just say, for example, your something went wrong and your entire internal network failed. What would you do? I mean, how'd you get that data back?
Well, for me, the probability is really unlikely because I have mirrored servers. So if home server goes down, server 2008 R2 automatically has a copy of all the data that's gone in and out of home server. So if home server goes offline, the shares are still available because server 08's running. So having two servers that are always on and always checking each other out really reduces those probabilities. But yeah, if I was someone who, you know, only had one or two boxes, didn't really have a lot of places to back up to, I would go Carbonite. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and we're not necessarily here to endorse Carbonite. There's other solutions out there. We've covered them because backup is the main theme of what we do on the Home Server Show. We've spent and exhausted a lot of time on the different cloud solutions from a CrashPlan.
Well,
Keep Vault. Go ahead, Brian.
Not sorry to interrupt you, Jim, but Carbonite's a paid for service. It's only like I think it's $54 a year. And if you want to definitely make sure that your data is stored safely, you definitely want to go with an offline solution. Of course, you want to use a local solution for sure, but then you're using the sneaker net. The sneaker net means that you're plugging in, you know, like every week, you're plugging in an external hard drive or, you know, using, you know, well, you can still use DVDs or whatever to back up your data. And then, you know, storing that in this, you know, a safe house. Like, so say I want to back up my computer, I can use Windows 7 backup tools that are native to Windows 7, take out that hard drive, bring it over, you know, to my parents' house
sure.
or something.
Sure.
And you know what I'm saying?
I actually know guys that do that. I mean, and some guys that are some pretty good computer guys, they have two external hard drives. They back up all their stuff to one.
Yep.
On Friday, they carry it over to their friend's house, drop it off, pick up the other one, bring it back. And if some catastrophe were to happen, at least they would have a copy of their data somewhere else. So it doesn't necessarily have
to
be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be high-tech or cloud-based to be able to make that work. So Carbonite's one of those. Tonight we've talked about Dropbox. That's another, for a certain amount of data, I think you get 2 gig for free, and then it starts costing.
2 gigs free, and then when you refer other people, you get an extra 500 megabytes or something like that.
There's yeah. Mesh from Microsoft. That's part of the Live. The Live suite that we were talking about earlier in the discussion, you get up to 25 gig on that one. I mentioned CrashPlan. There's Jungle Disk. There's Voila that I've talked about over at the Home Server Show. So, anyways, folks should and I get two or three of these a month. People come to me and say my hard drive crashed. I needed to recover my data. can you help me? They don't say it that way. They say, can you please help me recover my data? And one in three I can actually get back. I mean, sometimes the drive is so gone. And they say, but I've got pictures for 2 years that I've taken for 2 years on there. And I said, well, were you backing it up to something else? And they say, well, no. And I say, you know, there's nothing you can do if you're not. And that doesn't mean you go out and buy an external hard drive and you move all your photos from the C drive to the new D drive or E drive on, you know, that the backup, the external backup is created. You need to have it in two separate places. Copy it, you know, sync it between your hard drive and the external drive. Put it on a, you know, get an extra PC to move it to. Do something where it's in two different places. It has to be a minimum at least in two different places. So folks really – now, Christian, in your environment there, if I had a single file that was on a client, you know, on your PC, how many times is that replicated across your network?
Okay, so it's replicated when home server does the complete image backup so that it can be mounted, and then it's replicated to server 08 through BBTV add-in, so all the backups are backed up to both home server itself and to server 08, and now we have duplication on both servers, and there's like 5 2-terabyte drives in each server.
Yeah.
So you always have plenty of copies.
So you're really the only risk would be catastrophe for you. I mean, you're pretty well backed up from most hard drive failures or from a mistake, of a human error. And really, honestly, that's 99.9% of the problems that people have. I mean, the big disasters, those odds are pretty slim. And if it's going to happen, well, you're going to have other things to worry about. Than just your data. However, good idea to think through, especially here at Christmas time. Great idea to think through your backup plan and certainly
all,
you know, we're here. Go ahead.
Also, Jim, I would just like to mention these ideas are not dumb. They are maybe a little time consuming, but hey, I've had so many people say, oh, I had my pictures, my Christmas pictures on this laptop or this whatever, and they're gone.
And especially if they're on a laptop, because those things are so portable and they get lost.
Well, they're gone. Then, I can't get them back. Well, if you have a backup solution, hey, we can get them back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've stirred up a bunch of questions tonight, and we probably will, you know, again, we talk about this stuff every week, but if folks do have questions or they've got comments, you can post those right here on theaverageguy.tv in the comment section. We'd love to take your questions that you might have on this. We also, like I mentioned before a couple times, a lot of discussion around backup and home server backup over at thehomeservershow.com. So you can go over there and do that. We do a weekly podcast on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock Central each week, and you can go to thehomeservershow.com/live to get access to that and kind of dialogue with some guys that are pretty passionate about backup. So if you're thinking about your data and it's in one place and it's pretty important to you, you should probably put a backup plan together pretty quickly to make it work. Guys, we're at the end of the podcast. I want to, you know, wish both of you guys happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all the other holidays that are named during this time of the year. I hope you guys have good plans. I know you guys both have family plans, and actually you're holding off through this podcast to get out to those family plans, as it's the 23rd, right? So we're buttoned right up against Christmas. So thanks for taking the time, guys, to come out and put a quick podcast together.
No worries, Jim, and happy holidays to our listeners.
Great.
Thanks, guys. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, one more thing. We want to remind folks, we do have some affiliate links out on the average guy.tv site. That stuff helps us. Those affiliate links help us pay for stuff like bandwidth and web hosting and that kind of stuff. So if you're going to purchase something from ThinkGeek or Newegg, or you're interested in seeing what we have out there, your click-through on those affiliate links doesn't cost you any more. In fact, sometimes it costs you less, and it helps us out with a little bit to pay for those bills. So if you'd be so kind to do that, we would appreciate that. Okay, another podcast is done, and we'll do this again next week. We talked about maybe actually going live next week on Ustream. We do that on the Home Server Show. We may try here, so stay tuned. You want to follow me, Jay Collison, on Twitter, and or here at the site, and if you want to join us in on Ustream, there'll be some instructions on how to get that done. Thanks for listening. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and we'll talk to you guys next week.